in with today's Trails Report on the phone with me. I've got Bob Radke with Basin Rec. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So what you guys working on?
Well, hey, out here in the basin, our crews are out kind of cutting the side veg back on a number of trails this week and next week and the next couple weeks. I think this week they worked on the trails around the Utah Olympic Park, including Moose Puddle and Ironville. Next week they're going to head over to the Flying Dog area and trim back the vegetation on Flying Dog and Preserve Connector, and then head back to Sun Peak area and Collins Trail and all that. So that's kind of our push this time of year.
Okay.
Couple notes. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, in terms of new trail construction, what have you got?
Yeah. Well, we're going to start, we have on our plan this year to start a new trail in our PRI open space, which is just below the Utah Olympic Park there. We've been kind of building trails in there the last couple of years. We're going to build another directional downhill trail for mountain bikes above the one we built last year, the BYOB trail. So we're going to probably start that in the next week or two. So yeah, that's our next on our list of trails to get done this year. So, that'll take a few weeks to get in. So, and then, yeah, that's that plan there. On another note, we just want to let people know the trails are busy out there. And so 10 seconds of kindness, be prepared to stop a lot and see a lot of people, and they're dusty. So ask people to, it's probably better to slow down a little bit. And riding on the whole dusty trails is pretty hard on them. And it's easy to skid and all that. So just be careful.
Okay. Is that it?
Okay.
Thanks,
Bob. Yeah. One more note. Kilby Road is under construction, so the Millennium Trail along there is kind of getting impacted a little bit. It's still open. There's some sections that are closed. Just you have to get out on the roadway for a little bit in places, but it should be usable. Just be careful along Kilby Road this summer.
Okay, Bob. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Bob Radke with Basin Rec. Well, it's budget time, and the South Summit School Board was scheduled to adopt next year's budget at yesterday's meeting. In the studio with me, I have Superintendent of Schools Shad Sorensen, along with Business Administrator Kip Bigelow. Good morning.
Good morning.
So maybe we'll turn to you on this, Kip, or that the board went ahead and approved the budget?
The board did meet last night. We held our annual budget hearing, and the board did adopt the budget for 2019.
Okay. Any tax increases in that?
Yes, it looks like we will have to go through truth and taxation this year. One of the major things that's taking place is a lot of the school districts throughout the state are trying to increase wages, salaries for their staff. And in order for South Summit School District to remain competitive and try to attract teachers into our area where we have a very high cost of living, we try to do our best to keep pace with those other districts. And so with that increase, yes, we will be going through truth and taxation to cover those salaries.
Okay. When's that hearing scheduled for?
I believe we set that for August 14th.
Okay. 6 p.m.?
6 p.m.
And then talk to me a bit about what that tax increase would look like.
The average value of a primary residence in the South Summit School District we've calculated to be about $360,000. And for that $360,000 home, the increase will amount to about $40 a year.
Okay. And then you kind of go up and down from that.
Yes, depending on the value of a home. That dollar amount could be different for them, but based on that average, it's the $40.
So what does that then mean with teacher negotiations? I mean, what kind of raise will they see?
So through the negotiation process, teachers were offered a 4% increase on the salary schedule. In addition to that 4%, it was agreed to give a 1% bonus that will come sometime probably in November or December. So it amounts to about a 5% increase. That does get our starting wage for a first-year teacher just over $41,000 a year.
Okay. Compared to, what were they at a year ago?
Just over $39,000.
Okay. And is that still proving to be challenging to find the teachers that you need? I see advertisements in the Park Record all the time for staff.
Absolutely. In addition to being competitive with salary and benefit, is finding housing for our faculty. And in the Camas Valley, there is just not a lot of affordable housing. And so we are spending considerable amount of time working with our new faculty, helping them to find possible residences to live, especially our dual immersion faculty that are coming from out of country. We're trying to help them because they, of course, aren't here and need that assistance.
Yeah. Are you working with Mountainlands Community Housing at all? I know Scott Loomis was in Heber City last night working with the city council there in hopes of building 50 units, I think, of some kind of housing for their, you know, firefighters, teachers.
Right. We are in close consultation with them. And as you know, in the Silver Creek development, they are going to play a vital role in some of the initial phases there.
Okay, but that's still in Silver Creek, right? I mean, it's still a commute for
it is,
unless they're teaching.
But at least it's in the district.
Yeah. And then, I mean, so at $41,000, when you look at Park City's starting salary at $51,000, I mean, are you losing teachers to the Park City School District, or maybe not because there's no place to live here either?
We all share that same challenge, Park City, Wasatch, and South Summit with housing. We're not finding that we're losing a considerable amount of teachers. We did lose one, but he already lived here in the area. The districts are different enough that the faculty that are attracted to South Summit are wanting a small school environment, a rural school environment that's very progressive. And so I think faculty are looking for the type of work environment that they want in addition to the compensation package.
All right. I got to ask you, I mean, we're talking about here in Park City spending $1 million to buy a house in which to house our new superintendent. What kind of housing allowance do you get?
I do not get a housing allowance.
You're on your own. Good thing you've been living there for a while, huh? Kip, can you tell us in terms of just the operating budget, I mean, what that amount is?
Just for the operating budget this year, we're at $18 million.
All right. And then if you were to add in kind of the capital fund, which is another chunk of change?
Yeah, the capital funding and our building reserve, there would be another, you know, approximately another $6 million added onto that.
Okay. And that takes care of how many kids?
We're going to be approaching 1,700, probably just over 1,700 students this year would be my guess.
And in terms of what you budgeted for growth, I mean, what was that figure at?
In student, we're very close to what we anticipated being. We've looked at the students attending Silver Summit Academy. We've raised the cap on the number of students that will be allowed to go to those schools this coming year. So there will be an increase there. We continue to see an increase in students within the Camas Valley. If you look back 5 years ago, the birth rate dropped, and we are seeing a little bit of that last year and probably again this year in those students who are entering the kindergarten grade level. A couple of years ago, we had 140 students in kindergarten, and we're down to just over 100 right now.
So the growth seems to be tapering off a bit?
At least in that lower grade level. Now, you still have your in-migration that's coming in. And we're actually updating our master plan right now, working with the company that helped us do some of those projections for enrollment growth, and we're updating that. Don't have those figures yet, but probably within the next month we'll be able to zero in and see how close our initial estimations came and kind of what the future is bringing.
All right. Talk a little bit about that master planning process.
Well, I was just going to refer to the study that Kip talked about. Did show this is the lowest birth rate year, and then it starts to accelerate. So in addition to the in-migration, the birth rate is going to increase, and we will start seeing those students. Master planning is something that we're continuing to move forward with, and the Board of Education has a long-term plan of schools both in the Camas Valley and in the Silver Creek area. They are still working their way backwards now to determine which should be phase one, whether it should be starting with a new high school and then reallocating grades in the elementaries and middle, or whether they should start with an additional elementary in Francis. And so their plan is to put together both plans, very solid, which would include what will the building look like, how much will it cost, where will it be located, what will the grade configuration be, and have public meetings in September and October focusing on those two plans, and then do some additional surveying and be prepared to go forward with the bond in 2019.
Okay, and at that point we don't really know what that amount would be until we decide on what plan we're following.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little about the Silver Summit Academy. You say you've had to put a cap on that?
Well, we want to manage growth so that we can be successful. And so this first year we capped both the elementary and the secondary at 30 and 75. The Board of Education has approved funding and personnel so that we can go 75 up to 75 in the elementary and up to 125 in the secondary this next year. We are completely full. We do have waiting lists.
Wow. So has that given some relief then to the schools there in the Camas Valley?
It did give a little bit of relief. I don't have the exact figures, but throughout the year it was about 50% coming from the South Summit School District and 50% coming from other districts.
So in terms of getting those kids to the academy, is that the district's responsibility? I mean, are you busing kids out of Camas Valley?
It is not, because it's a school choice facility, and so the parents are taking care of that. Some of our students do take advantage of the Park City transportation that's running between Camas and Park City.
So the timing works on that route for them?
Yes, somewhat.
Kind of, sort of.
Kind of, sort of.
Yeah.
We hope for more.
All right. Is that built out, though? I mean, it's ready. It actually is kind of a year-round school, isn't it?
Well, they have an extended year, and so they start earlier in August and go until about this last week in June. But, again, the students have control of their pacing, and so many of our students were finished with their year at the same time as the students in a traditional school finished.
Right. And how is it that we know that they're learning what they're supposed to be learning?
We have essentials, and those same essentials or standards apply to a traditional school and to the Silver Summit School. And you build the curriculum based on those standards, and then you assess based on those standards. And so within the curriculum, you have assessments that are online, and you have face-to-face instruction at Silver Summit, and you're consistently assessing to make sure that people, our students, understand and are successful with those standards.
Okay. Anything else, guys, going on that you wanted to mention?
Always fun and busy.
Okay. Do you guys get a break at all during the summer? Or?
We work year-round, but we do take advantage of the beautiful area that we live in. Enjoy some of that as well.
Okay. Again, August 14th, 6 p.m., that's the opportunity for people to comment about the proposed tax increase.
Yeah, I did want to make a quick note that the Opportunities Conference that traditionally has been held in the spring is going to now be held in the fall. And so next time we have a chance to talk, we'll talk a little bit more about that. I can tell you who the keynote speaker will be in the breakouts at that point in time.
Okay, Superintendent Chad Sorensen, Business Administrator Kip Bigel, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's 8:30. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. A member of the Utah House of Representatives from Utah County and physician Mike Kennedy, one of two Republicans on the primary election ballot running for U.S. Senate to succeed Orrin Hatch. Mike Kennedy joins me now on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for joining us. You say Washington is in need of a heavy dose of real-world Utah Republican values, and I'm ready to write the prescription. So what does that prescription call for?
Yeah, it calls for a lot of things. Financial security and stability is one of the fundamental things with this omnibus bill that passed several weeks ago. I feel like Washington, D.C. is just being entirely irresponsible with our money, and as a result, we're putting our national security and our future at risk. I've got 8 children and 3 grandchildren, and I'm deeply invested in making sure we make good decisions today so that my children, your children, all of us have a great opportunity 20 and 30 years from now. And so that's one thing. And in addition, watching out for each other, compassion, and kindness, but not government programs to force compassion. But actually, we help each other as a community, and we don't need the federal government to tell us what to do to try to help each other. And so those are some of the Utah values that I want to bring to Washington, and making sure that we are stable and secure so that our children and grandchildren have a bright future.
So are you saying we didn't spend enough to ensure the safety of our country?
It's one of those things that when you come to omnibus bill spending, I call it a chameleon bill. There's just so many different things that are in that bill. It's hard to even know, and people didn't even have 2 days to read a over 2,000-page bill. So it's a little difficult to even know what was in that bill when they passed it, and I'm just invested in making sure that our legislators know what they're signing off on before they vote on those kind of things.
Are you in support of the tax cuts that went into effect in January that lowered taxes for corporations but will only pile more onto the deficit?
Yeah, the deficit is a big issue, and what we need to do is control our spending. So I'm in favor of money in your pocket and money in your listeners' pocket and less money in Washington, D.C.'s pocket. And then when we need to develop programs and make sure we're taking care of people, it should be community and state that are doing those things, not the federal government. So I'm in favor of tax cuts and making sure that we cut spending as well so that we can move right in the right direction financially.
All right, so where do we cut that spending?
Actually, Leslie, across the board, I work in Medicare. I've been a family doctor for 20 years, and I see that there's a lot of waste even in Medicare, which is we can keep our promises to our people in Medicare and still make cuts. And I've got examples that I have as a doctor. It's just one of those things that across the board, everybody needs to take a piece away. And I believe that if we're all working together, we can work in the right direction to reduce our deficit.
Yeah. Are we talking, though, about in some of the entitlement, funds? Is that what you're talking about cutting?
When Senator Rand Paul called the penny plan, the 1% cut across the board. And I'd take even 0.5% or 0.25%. The reality is there's waste. I've talked to many people on the campaign trail. They see waste in defense. They see waste in Social Security. The reality is that we can work on these programs so that we're still maintaining and keeping our promises to our vulnerable citizens, those that have depended on these programs, and at the same time cut waste. And I'm dedicated to that. I think if we're going to continue to work in the direction that we're in deep trouble long term. So we have to make cuts.
Between 2010 and 2016, doing a little bit of research here, the number of immigrants coming into the country dropped significantly compared with the past 50 years. The percentage growth of immigrants is the smallest in generations. What should our national immigration policy look like?
I'm a first-generation American on my dad's side. My dad is an immigrant, and I want to make sure that those that want to come here and live here contribute to our society and also contribute to our economy, that they can come here and work legally, and if they want to work and then go home, that they should be able to do that. If they want to live here, I think, Leslie, we need to do that. Immigrants are the lifeblood of our society, and I've been blessed to have family that came here, and they did it legally, and we've been able to live the American dream as a result of that. So I want to make sure that our doors are open to our immigrant friends that want to come in, but our borders have to be secure. It needs to be easier to come here legally than it is to come here illegally. And we obviously, in the past few weeks, we've had a lot of issues with separation of families at the borders that people have recently come to be aware of. And there's just so many troubles at the border. We have to start working on our border security to make it more viable and that it's easier to come here legally than illegally.
Seems like it took folks a long time to actually notice what was going on at our borders with the separation of children. How have you responded to that?
Yeah, Leslie, it's been interesting because I've been in the state legislature for 6 years, and of course I've been aware of the issues that our society cares about. And immigration before I came into the state legislature was an issue. And then for those 6 years, actually, we didn't hear much of anything. But this year, all of a sudden, and I think the president has had something to do with that, but we've been focusing more on our borders. And I think it's high time that we do that. The federal government has a responsibility to make sure our borders are secure. And so I'm dedicated also, if you elect me as your U.S. senator, that we make sure we have border security and that we're going to move in the right direction so that we're safe and secure as a society.
So you are a big supporter of building a wall. What I don't get, though, is why people think a wall is going to do anything. I mean, we've got tunnels. What about those?
Yeah, very good point, Leslie. And I think in today's world, it's easy for people to think about a wall. A wall is a physical symbol, but I just talk about border security. The reality is a wall may be a component of that. I'm not I've not walked the whole border, whether it be north or south borders. I don't know what is going to be explicitly useful at different areas. If it's a wall, fine. But you're right, there's tunnels, and of course there's aircraft that can go over walls. So at some point, we need to make sure that our borders are secure, and I'm dedicated to making sure that our border security has the resources necessary to not only take care of the borders, but also these people that come to our borders, that they're treated with compassion and dignity, that, as you mentioned earlier, we're not separating families at the borders, that we have resources that we can take, make sure that the children especially are safe and secure, and that means staying with their parents.
Park City's economy would come to a standstill without our immigrant population. I mean, they are willing to do jobs that others don't want. When I moved to Park City back in 1980, I mean, it was the local kid that was washing the dishes. That is not the case today. Your opponent says that we need to handle these workers through visas, yet those visas only allow folks to stay into the country for, what, 4-6 months at best? How is that beneficial to employers here in the Park City area? I mean, having to retrain somebody every 6 months would be ridiculous.
Agree, and it's a great point. Our visas for people to come here and work legally, that if we need to extend those because the work season is going longer. And by the way, it's not just Park City that benefits. I've talked to people all over the state, and they need low-skilled and high-skilled labor. And the reality is that our children are not necessarily going into those very difficult jobs. And in my family, I'm investing in my children knowing how to work really hard with their hands and being out in the sun and doing the hard work. At the same point, if we need people to keep our economy moving, and whether it's low or high skill, let's fix that visa so that people can stay as long as they need to do the work that they need to do and have the employer have them here responsibly and legally. And then when it's time for them to go home, that actually everybody is better off as a result. The person is made money, been able to have that now that they're going home. And in addition, our economy has been built by these good people who want to work honestly and legally here in our country.
Well, the man you're hoping to replace has been in office since I've been in Utah, and he's had almost 40 years to do something about immigration, and it still hasn't happened. I mean, why do you think that you could make a difference?
Yeah, Leslie, it's a great point. And the reality behind legislating is it's a team sport, and everybody can come in there with the best of intentions. The reality is I need to work with 99 other senators and 435 representatives and a president, and personalities change over time. And so I'm dedicated to general principles and would love to develop relationships and work with not just the good people of Utah, but also with people in Washington, D.C. to make sure we're moving the ball forward. But if it's a football analogy that we use with this, if I can get the ball 1 or 2 yards forward instead of a touchdown, I'll take progress. The reality is it is a target-rich environment in Washington, D.C., not just with immigrant, but many other things. There's a lot of things to do, and I'm dedicated to moving in the right direction. I don't think we can fix all these things in the next couple of years, but I do believe that we can move the ball in the right direction, and I'm the kind of person that looks for solutions and working with people to develop those solutions.
Where do you stand on gun control, and do you accept money from the NRA?
NRA, I don't believe, has ever donated any money to me. They have given me an A grade. I'd have to check my donations. I've been doing this for 6 years, and I don't believe I've ever gotten any money from the NRA. As a matter of fact, I'm not aware of them donating much money to anybody. But they've given me an A grade, and when it comes to guns, I believe the people wielding the guns that perpetrate these terrible tragedies on our school children, that's the biggest problem we need to focus on. And as a doctor, I understand mental health, and I regularly deal with people that have different thoughts and feelings that we need to work on and move in the right direction. And I'd love to reach out to those individuals well before any sort of terrible tragedies happen and make sure that they have the resources necessary so that we can prevent and reduce the likelihood that these events ever happen. So in my case, I helped to organize the Utah School Safety Commission, which brought people together. And recently they've promulgated their first generation concepts. And a part of that is mental health outreach and making sure that people have resources in our communities so that we know and are able to prevent these events before they ever happen.
Yeah, but that takes money.
And
money that you want to cut.
No, not in the state and in the communities. The reality is the federal government has gone far beyond the bounds that it ever should have focused on. The things that it does, for example, school lunches in the federal government, that's never been something that the founders intended that the federal government was highly skilled and capable at determining. So when it comes to cutting federal funds, I do see that there's a lot of opportunity there, but actually where we need to fix a lot of these complicated problems, it's in the communities and also in the state. So I'm dedicated to making sure we have local solutions that are accountable and flexible so that we can develop the right kind of solutions that are actually going to make a difference in this area as well as many others.
So at the convention, you've got the 51% compared to Mitt Romney's 49% of the vote there. But when I have the television on, all I see are Mitt Romney advertisements. Do you have a chance in this? I mean, do you have the war chest that he's got?
No, we'll never have the war chest that he's got. It's taken him 20 years of presidential campaigning, and I respect the fact that he's developed a nationwide presence. That's for good and for bad for him. I've talked to lots of people that are disappointed in how he's gone about things, but I'm just a regular guy, Leslie. I'm a family doctor. I'm an attorney, a state legislator. We've been able to raise, and these are just kind of the raw numbers. There's more details coming later, but we've been able to raise about $200,000 for this race, and we're proud of that fact. And in addition, my wife and I have put in about $400,000 of our own retirement funds to fund this. And so we need enough money to be relevant, and we've tried to do that, and we're still continuing to push the message out. But between now and Tuesday, there's a few more days, and we are still expecting that we're going to do really well, and it's just one by one. Money doesn't vote, people do, and so we'll never be able to duplicate the opponent's money. But people like the message, and they want to make sure a regular Utah's in that seat, and that's where I come into play here.
Yeah, so I guess what the biggest difference between you and Mitt Romney, what would you say?
That is an important, there's a lot of things that I would say. That's an important question. So I'm somebody who's lived here and worked here and raised my family here. I understand Utah. I understand it on a granular level, one by one, talking to my patients. I understand it on a legislative level. I've worked with the governor, the senators, and the representatives to solve Utah-specific issues. And so I love that component. I'm also a doctor, so I can speak credibly about healthcare issues, and we're going to have those conversations for the rest of your and my natural life. And finally, I'm somebody who's just a regular guy. I understand what it's like to not have money. I understand what it's like to balance a budget and struggle to make ends meet. And I want just a regular person representing regular people in that seat. And I think I'd do a great job for the good people of Utah. I'd be honored to have their support.
I need to leave it there. Mike Kennedy, thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie. Have a good day.
Well, the Park City Council adopted its $55 million operating budget last night and also scheduled to approve a fireworks ban. In the studio to recap that and other issues, I have Councilmember Becca Gerber. Good morning.
Good morning.
So during discussions about the budget, specifically the discussion about the special services grant, Councilmember Tim Henney referred to the funds as, quote, money from heaven, and that nonprofits should not rely on these city grants. Does that mean this is the end of them?
No, not at all. It does mean that we are talking about reworking them. You know, we are very privileged to be able to give, I believe it's 1% of our budget to our nonprofits as a special service grant. And every year, it puts us in a little bit of a difficult position because we feel like the nonprofits come to us and are trying to prove how valuable they are to the community. And we absolutely understand and we value all of our nonprofits. And wish we could give more money to everyone, but we have a limited amount of money and we're forced to kind of divide it up between all the nonprofits. And really we're looking at nonprofits that are providing a service that the city could not or that would cost the city additional funds to provide ourselves. So, you know, we're just going to take a look at the process that we go through in dividing up those funds and see if there's maybe a better way to do that and a way that we can it's just kind of taking a look at the whole process again.
Yeah. Besides KPCW that was turned down, how many other nonprofits applied for money didn't get funded?
You know, I'm not sure exactly how many. We did find that there were some people that were applying for grants or special service contracts that were a bit redundant. So I think you know, on the list, we gave quite a bit to the Park City Historical Society and Museum last year. And so this year it doesn't look like they received anything. And, you know, Mountain Town Music didn't get anything. But it's a pretty complicated task, I think, to figure out how they're going to give money. It's a combination of special services and how well they're funded and what money that they're needing. It's like I said, we're going to take a look at it.
So that was the direction to staff, is that we need to rework this before next.
Exactly.
Okay. In regard to the bond for Treasure Hill, the report has it set at $50.7 million. Mm-hmm. Nate Rockwood said that could change. Under what circumstances would the council amend that amount?
You know, we've asked for public opinion and output, and we haven't really gotten a lot of people coming in to council to say, you know, I don't feel good about the bond at this amount. I don't feel that we should be bonding for this, or we should bond for more. And if all of a sudden we did have a lot of people coming into council and saying, we aren't comfortable with this, we need to change this amount, we have until August, I believe, 30th to do so. So if there's someone out there that still feels very strongly about how much we're bonding for, again, as of right now, it's at $50.7 million, and we are giving up quite a bit. You know, we've talked about being austere, going through an austerity time in our city to make sure that we can fund this bond. So we've cut back on some road projects, some sidewalk projects. This is going to take pretty much all of the money out of our open space fund. So this is a big cut for our city to make it to bring the bond down to 50.7 from our original purchase price of $64 million for the parcel.
Yeah, and are you signed off on the fact that Treasure will be open space and no development will be allowed, even though we're hearing people talk about how if we sold off some large home development lots, we could reduce the bond by millions more?
You know, I think what we've kind of come to the conclusion is that we need to keep this as simple as possible to get this done. And also, it's just not a great area for building anything. It's not a great area for building large private homes with the access that there is there. And, you know, something that's very dear to me is affordable housing. And after talking with our affordable housing team, it's not a great area for housing either. It's just, it's not an area where if you can at all possibly avoid building, you would like to do that.
Staff had questions for council regarding the 2020 visioning discussion. This hasn't been done since 2009. Council pretty much agreed then, rather than build off what you learned in 2009, that you want to start from scratch. Why?
I think Park City has changed quite a bit since 2009, and we just want to make sure that we aren't leading people into saying that something's important. We really want to hear what's important to the community right now as we have evolved. So the best way to do that is to start from scratch and just really make it an open discussion and let people come forth and tell us what they think is important right now.
And we had to decide whether or not we should get feedback just from people with the city limits, or should we broaden to include it? Mayor Andy Bierman said he'd like to include the entire county. Is that what we're going to go forward with?
I believe what he said was that he would be interested in seeing if the county would be interested in having a parallel visioning for the county at the same time that we're doing our internal visioning, because we do overlap in so many ways, but we do want to make sure that we, when we do our visioning in Park City proper, that we are giving a preference to our residents and really making sure we are hearing from our residents what they need. But there are many different components to our community in Park City. There's the business community, the nonprofit community, as well as the people that reside here. So really the live, work, play community kind of comes into play when we have this discussion.
And certainly starting from scratch means it's more expensive. And then when you talk about into the austerity portion, I mean, why isn't this something that we just put off and save? I don't know how much you've got budgeted for visioning process.
You know, it's been 10 years. The last one was done in 2009, as you said, and think of all the things that have changed in our community in the past 10 years with the resorts changing ownership and all the development that has gone on in town and some of our big projects that we have going on right now, but from Bonanza Flats to the Arts and Culture District. We just think it's really important right now to take a good look at our community and hear what is important to everyone and where would they want us to go.
Did you get a price tag on it?
I don't believe we did.
All right. Three Kings will replace the Spiro treatment plant. It will also begin treating water coming from the Judge Tunnel. Apparently, you mentioned council getting emails from concerned residents. What are their concerns?
So the Three Kings water treatment plant is going to, on the same footprint that we have our water treatment plant right now, we're going to double the size of the building. And as imagined, there are a lot of concerns about construction and just the size of the project that is going to go on in that neighborhood. And with good reason, it is a big project and it is very expensive and it's going to take a lot of time and money and focus from our city. And so, yeah, we are just getting through the schematics, and it is going to go through Planning Commission, so there will be a lot of time for public input. But as we've learned over the years, the more we involve our community in these big decisions and in these big projects, the better the results are. So we just want to make sure that we are reaching out to the residents and making sure that we are providing as much opportunity for public output as possible.
All right. The easement for Bonanza Flat is coming to completion here. Mm-hmm. You're scheduled to adopt that, what, next month?
Yes, I believe so.
And you have been asking for comments. Are you continuing to get some?
You know, last night was the first night where we had Bonanza Flats on the agenda, and we did not receive any public input. But yes, we have received emails over the past year. Our inboxes have been flooded with input about uses and access and what people would like to see up there. So we're very excited with the work that Wendy and Utah Open Lands has completed. It's a very comprehensive conservation easement, and just the amount of cataloging they've done in our packet, there were, you know, almost 200 pictures, and the detail that they have gone to is quite amazing.
Any more clarification on who's going to enforce the easement once it gets put into place?
You know, that I think is still going to be discussed, and I don't have a clear answer for that one.
Because it's Park City's easement mm-hmm. in another county.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Also, in terms of working with Wasatch County on this, I mean, is there some scheduled meeting to have some kind of conversation before this gets approved?
I don't know if there's something scheduled, but we are looking to communicate further with Wasatch County and make sure that what we the big issue that we are working through with them is access and the roads. And so we are looking forward to having further discussions with them to make sure that we come up with a plan that meets their needs as well as meets our conservation goals.
All right. And finally, the fireworks ban, that was a slam dunk.
Yeah, it's a dry year. And already, if you look at what's happened kind of across the West, we'd like to be as cautious as possible and make sure that everyone has a safe and fun holiday.
All right. Rebecca, anything else you want to mention?
I don't think so. Just thank you for having us, and look forward to seeing you again soon.
All right. Thanks, Becca. Becca Gerber, a member of the Park City Council. It's 8:55 now. Good morning. Well, tomorrow, a fundraiser to help gain awareness of the issue of PTSD and how a service animal can help will be held in the studio with details. I have organizer Jen Turner along with Kathy King. She's the executive director of Canines with a Cause. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Jen, when and where is this happening?
So, like I said, tomorrow at 1 to 4 p.m. The auction will end at 4 p.m. It's at Aspen Grove Rustics in Heber, 1490 South Highway 40.
Okay. And why are you holding this fundraiser, and who's it for?
To gain more awareness for PTSD for our veterans and first responders.
Okay. So what's going to happen there at the fundraiser?
We are going to have quick sell art. We're going to have four different artists that will have auction art. We'll also have Access Consciousness with Missy Peckham and Erica Workman. And we'll also have Antiques and Gems with the Aspen Grove Rustics store.
Okay. So, Kathy, talk a little bit about how Canines with a Cause is involved in this.
Well, Jen was kind enough to think of us when she was planning this event to raise awareness for PTSD and suicide, not only with our veterans but with our first responders. So since we do train dogs for PTSD, she thought of us. So we are excited to be involved. We also have some art donated from local artist Corinne Humphrey, who has one of our Canines with a Cause dogs, Adobe. So we're just thrilled to be involved.
Okay. So all of the proceeds will go to Canines with a Cause. And then what do you do with the money?
We train dogs for veterans suffering with PTSD. The dogs are trained in local prisons. We actually have dogs not only in Timpanogos, which is the women's prison here in Draper, but we're training dogs currently. We have incarcerated veterans in Carson City training dogs for our program. And we've just joined forces with Lewiston, Idaho training dogs. So once the dogs are basically have skills and assessment, if they're suitable for the program, we pair them with veterans through the VA that are referred to us as benefiting from having companionship and training a dog. And then from there, we give them the ability to train their own service or emotional dogs.
So how does that, how do the dogs help, though, specifically with PTSD?
Well, it's interesting. We're in our second year of research with the National Institute for Veteran Studies through the University of Utah. And what they're finding is it's not just having the dog, it's the act of training the dog that's really helping the PTSD symptoms. PTSD, one of the main issues is they just don't want to leave. They're very hypervigilant. Leaving their home is a big issue. Having to train a dog, they have to come to class. They have to participate. They have to take the dog out, especially with service dog training. When we are finishing off a dog, we ask them, you know, where will you take this dog? The local grocery store is, you know, getting my hair cut. So we train them how to go out and work with that dog in those situations so it can be certified as a service dog for them, which also gives them a sense of accomplishment. Plus, our dogs are shelter dogs, so they're rescuing a dog on top of it. So that's the process. And truly, we have found in the last 8.5 years that we've been doing this, a lot of instances where we do hear, I would have committed suicide without this dog because now I have a purpose and I can't leave this dog behind. So there's something to be said, and we would really like to expand that to first responders as well.
And Jen, you have a personal story with your son suffering from PTSD.
It was actually my son's father who suffered. He was a nurse in the emergency department. And he committed suicide in 2003. So this event is very important to us for that specific topic. Also, my husband is a veteran. He served a tour in Iraq. He has PTSD. We have 2 border collies. They've made a serious impact in his life. As a wife, as a veteran, I can tell you that those dogs help me. They help alert when something is wrong. They're always going to be there by his side, and it's really a great program. I really believe in this cause.
Great. Again, it's happening 1 to 4 o'clock tomorrow. The address again at Aspen?
1490 South, Highway 40.
Okay. All right. Good luck. Thanks for
coming
out.
Thank you.